You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. So hello, everybody. I'm Nadira Jamal, and welcome to episode 29 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. This episode is sponsored by the Las Vegas Belly Dance Intensive and Festival, which is now in its final year. So to make sure that you don't miss out on this epic event, you can sign up now at bellydanceintensive.com. And if I can add a little personal note, both I and Kari Yoon will be there. So if you'd like to meet us both in person, that would be a great way to do that. So the clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want to learn about the what, so things like movements and combinations and choreographies, it's really easy to get help. But if you were more concerned with the why and the how, things like composition, musicality, stagecraft, business, professionalism, that can be a little bit harder to get. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different topic, and we always have time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest today is Kata Yoon. She's an instructor and performer of Middle Eastern dance in Northern Virginia. She's consistently taught weekly classes to students of all ages and backgrounds since 1999, beginning in Northwest Florida. The hard and sometimes controversial lessons learned in that first year of teaching, along with her background as an educator in the classroom, led her to create a dance format and curriculum for teaching Oriental dance. In 2009, she founded Mosaic LLC and began teaching and performing full-time. Her current students include kids and adults of all ages, abilities, and backgrounds, from beginner to professional level. With her extensive teaching experience and training in a variety of Middle Eastern and belly dance styles, she aims to bring out the best in her students while taking into consideration their individual performance goals. As a mentor, her mission is to help instructors take the complexity out of teaching and put creativity in. She knows firsthand the demands of teaching, as well as the needs and interests of students at various points in their dance journey. She aims to help dancers become confident, dynamic, and ever-evolving instructors and have fun while advancing their students' progress. Through her training seminars and books, she hopes to promote teaching standards and breadth of knowledge within the Middle Eastern dance community. You can check her out at Kata Yoon Dance, spelled K-A-T-A-Y-O-U-N, dance.net, or at rocksmosaic.com, RAQSMOSAIQUE.com. So today, Kata Yoon is going to talk to you about how to tell when you're ready to teach. So thanks so much for coming, Kata Yoon.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us about how you got started in Oriental dance.
Actually, I got started when I was 17. It was the senior. I was the summer before my senior year. And I had entered a scholarship pageant for girls, and I needed a talent. I did not have a talent. And I had been in one other pageant before when I was younger, and I danced, and it was terrible. And so my mother said, belly dance, you should do a belly dance. It'll be different. It'll be cool. So we looked up a belly dance instructor in my town, and we found one, and I started taking lessons. She taught me a routine, and I won fifth runner-up in the talent competition. I didn't actually get a trophy, but it was really cool to be recognized. And I sort of dabbled here and there after that and then got serious later on. But that's how I got started. I just needed a talent for 2 minutes.
And obviously it took hold. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in teaching?
Actually, I started teaching right alongside my belly dance teaching in the classroom. My very first teaching job was a belly dance job, but I started teaching in the classroom. I was an elementary school French teacher, and at my job I had the opportunity to teach multiple levels of students, various backgrounds, and during that time I also had the chance to go through the education licensure program for the state. And so I got to take a lot of courses in education and curriculum instruction, human development, in the different aspects of actually teaching and specialty areas for my subject. But right along that time, I was also teaching. I started teaching belly dance, and I was noticing all these parallels between what I was doing in my day job and then in what I was doing in my belly dance job, and they just sort of, I was developing them side by side. And at my day job, in my school, I had to write the curriculum. They didn't have one that they knew of, so I had to actually write it. And so it gave me a really good background for writing my belly dance curriculum. But that's how I got into the teaching aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. And what got you into teacher training specifically?
I had been teaching for a while here, and there was an influx of new instructors. It was during the belly dance boom, and so a lot of dancers who had previously just been students, not just, but had been students, they started teaching because of the demand, and I sort of started a mentoring club. It wasn't anything too formal, but we had a process and we had a program in place, but it was really more informal. We didn't always meet in person, but there was a lot of communication. And it just sort of grew from there in different formats. But that's how it started, is just the need for that guidance from the experienced instructor, which was me at the time in where I was living, and new teachers who had just joined, sort of the new crop of teachers that were in demand at the time.
So let's jump into the big question. How can somebody tell if they're ready to teach?
Well, I have 10 questions that I came up with based on things that I wish I had known, or I wish and someone more experienced than me had told me. So the first one, number one, is a big one. I ask, do you have enough material to be able to cover a year's worth of classes? And for a lot of people, that may mean a curriculum. But for every level and type of class that you intend to teach, do you have enough material to be able to carry that class through about a year? And then after that, maybe you can start recycling. But yeah, you need to have enough material to be able to teach a class consistently.
And what are the other questions?
Okay, so we have number two. I just want to go back and say something about the first one, having the material. I just want to point out, I'm not trying to judge anyone in this, and I'm really trying to give information, but at the same time, the question about the material, having something to teach for a whole year, is more of an assessment on your background and training, the experience that you have. So it doesn't mean that you have to have an actual curriculum, but that you are prepared to put forth that effort to create that material, and you have that material to teach.
Gotcha.
Okay. Should we go to number two?
Please.
Okay, sure. So number two I have, along with your curriculum, do you have enough of a music collection to support your curriculum or whatever classes you're going to teach for your first year? Having that music collection is really important for the not just the class type, but your audience. Who's going to be your audience? If it's a fitness audience, or if it's a kids audience, so you're going to have different music that's going to appeal to different audiences. But also to the different things that you're going to teach. So you're going to you may have a great collection of performance music, but you need teaching music, and it's not the same. Usually you want to have separate types of music for warm-up. You want to have different types of music for specific rhythms or specific instruments or concepts that you want to teach. And a lot of these are, you have to dig. They don't just pop out at you. There are compilations that are more popular now, but you need to go look for them. You need to have them in your collection to be able to use them in your teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number three, I have, do you understand the needs of students at various levels, of various interests, and levels of experience? For example, beginner student versus a serious hobbyist who still enjoys the beginner classes, but really, may not need that same nurturing and that introduction, that initiation that an absolute beginner needs. or versus an intermediate student who may be ready to perform, or they may just be happy in being in the more advanced classes, but they're not really interested in performing. So understanding the different needs of students, regardless of what their ability is, what their own personal needs and interests are. And there's also the fitness or recreational student who really just enjoys coming to class for fun, for fitness, for a social sort of outlet. But being able to understand those needs, and not everyone is going to want to perform. Not everyone is hungry for a challenge. Some people are just happy to go to class and be around other dancers. And then there are some who that's why they're there. So being able to decipher the different needs of students and being able to offer separate classes if that's something that you feel you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So number four, how is your fitness level? Do you have the physical and mental stamina and energy to talk, dance, and basically lead a group of people for at least 1 hour? And if you're teaching multiple classes, especially in a row, how about, you know, 2 or 3 hours to be able to sustain that energy level? It takes a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm to be able to keep that class going. It's not something that anybody can do. And you may be really happy to be in a class for an hour and you're totally fine, but this puts you on the spot. You really need to have energy to take the class from beginning to the end with the same energy that you started. A lot of times it actually, you know, you hope that energy builds through your class, but it requires a certain fitness level. So you need to ask, you know, am I at that level of fitness where I can do that? And if you're in good shape, that's great. Most dancers are, but, you know, sometimes we haven't gotten used to being in the spotlight and talking and being able to move at the same time. So that takes a little adjusting too, but you can do it.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, old aerobics videos from the 80s and 90s where they would say you have to do the talk test. You know, you should be breathing hard to be able to hold a conversation.
Right. Absolutely. So for number five, I have patience. How is your patience with yourself and also with others? This is a big one for teachers. Of course, we have to be patient. And, you know, there is such a thing, I guess, as too much patience, but you need to have a minimum amount of patience, which is probably more than average, than the average person. Having the patience to do the same warm-up or the same drills from class to class, but also understanding that not every student is going to learn at the same pace that you're teaching. So having the patience with yourself to be able to try new things without getting upset with yourself that, it didn't quite go well. I really messed that up. But, you know, giving yourself a chance to become oriented to the job, you need to have that patience. And if you get frustrated easily and it's just, you know, not in your nature to have any patience, it, you know, might be difficult, you know, starting out, because you really need to have that patience with yourself and with others.
Mm-hmm.
So for number six, I have, are you willing to smile, speak in public, and be enthusiastic, even when you don't feel like it? You've had a really long day, right?
Yep.
You've had a long day. You just want to go home and you want to get a glass of wine and you want to curl up with your cat, but you have class to teach. So you put on your smile, you grab your bag, and you go. You put on the music and you deliver the class that everyone paid you to do, and you know, you need to be able to do that. You know, it's just like a day job. You know, you have to go into your day job. You know, sometimes you don't feel like it, but you go in anyway. Dance is the same thing. We just don't think of it as a job sometimes. We think it's okay. I can, you know, I don't feel like teaching tonight, but it's really not okay. It's a job just like any other employment. You do need to put on that smile and deliver the class that you're supposed to deliver. And I think that most folks are, you know, it makes them happy when they go in to teach. So even if you did have a bad day, you're probably going to feel better after class. But if it's something that you know you're going to dread and afterwards you feel horrible, you know, it doesn't always mean that, you know, you did a horrible job and that you shouldn't be teaching. It just means that just even though you didn't feel well, you went in and you did your job and it was fine. Next time it'll be better. So it's okay. It's okay. We forgive you. All right. So for number 7, are you organized and reliable? Can people count on you to show up on time and be professional? You know, this is, it's dance, it's fun, it's creative, it's artistic, and it's a social outlet too, but it's still a job. You still need to show up and give people what they ordered, basically. So are you going to be prepared for class? Are you someone who your friends can count on or others can count on? Is this something that you feel like even if you have issues with being late, is this something that you can make happen? You have to have that organization. There's a lot that goes into not just the lesson planning, but organizing your students and maybe events, organizing your material, organizing your music. A lot of organization goes into that. But also people want to know that they can rely on you and that you're not gonna go anywhere, or you're gonna give them what they paid for, and they can count on that time when they look forward to dance, and you're gonna be there, and it's gonna be great. Number 8, are you willing to give even when you really need nurturing yourself? And the other part of that is, are you willing to give up your own dance time for your students? This is a big one, and it's something that I think a lot of teachers struggle with, even after many years of teaching, is that burnout of giving so much of yourself. We're naturally nurturers, and we mentor, and we nurture, and we encourage and support our students. And those who are willing to do that, that's part of the job description. But we also give up our own dance time, where that's the time we rehearse our own choreography, or we work on our own practice, our own drills. And sometimes you're teaching when there's a really cool workshop going on, and you want to go, but you can't. You can't just drop the class anytime there's something that you want to do. So being committed to that, but sometimes you do have to give up the things that you would normally do for yourself during that time. It's your dance time, but now you're splitting it up. You're sharing it with your students. So that's something that I think a lot of people struggle with sometimes, is trying to balance that. So being aware of it in advance, knowing that that might happen, I think is at least half the battle. So how are we doing?
You're doing great.
All right. So number 9, do you stay abreast of the belly dance industry? And having the knowledge of the business side of teaching dance, and especially the business side of teaching belly dance. This, again, is a little bit of evaluation or assessment on your experience and background. But knowing what websites are out there, the products, the different services, the personalities, all the things that we the events and things that we find exciting, especially now with the internet. You know, when I started teaching, we didn't have a lot of the internet. We had a little bit of it. It was very limited. But now it's I hate to say it, it's a little bit polluted with a lot of different things, and it's very difficult for students who are new to the whole belly dance world to sort of decipher what's the style my teacher is teaching, what should I be looking for, what kind of music should I look for, what kind of DVDs are out there? Should I get a DVD that I can practice to, and which one is good? These are questions that students ask, and you want to have some answers for them. I mean, of course, we don't know every product that's out there because there's so much, but, you know, at least having the judgment to be able to say, oh yeah, I've heard of this dancer. That's going to be a really good workshop. Or I've heard that DVD is really good. Or actually, that DVD is probably not what you want. It's completely different from what we're doing, and I'm afraid it might confuse you. So just knowing those things, you don't have to be able to give them all of that information. But if they come to you with those questions, you want to know what to say and have some kind of an opinion on it. And on the other side of that, alongside, you have the business of teaching belly dance and having that community knowledge of what are the standards in your community on the business side of it. And, you know, we talk a lot about the performance aspects, about rates and things, but knowing that specifically for teaching is important too, and having that that knowledge of the performance is very good too, of course. But these are things that students get curious about, or they do come up. You want to be able to give them that information, or at least show them how to decipher through all of it. So it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. On number 10, do you have a support system? A support system, a social life, or a stress outlet that is outside of belly dance? This again goes back to, you know, we as teachers give so much, and that's, it requires you to give to your students, to be nurturers to your students, in order to be successful. We do need to offer some of that. But what happens is, normally when we go to dance class, that's our social outlet. That's our support system. We go there. That's our creative outlet. We go there to have fun. But when you're the teacher, that's not the case. So you're offering that space for your students to be free, and where they're allowed to be vulnerable with, you know, they don't have any fear of being ridiculed, where they can learn and grow in a supportive and nurturing environment where someone is there for them, for their needs. It's not your place to be nurtured. So you don't want to dump your issues and your problems on your students. It's not nice. So you want to have a support system of your own that is separate from that. And I think I don't think this is just relevant to new teachers. I think it's relevant to every teacher. You do need to have something outside of your teaching classes, outside of your students, that's yours, where you can go and you can vent and you can be yourself. You can be a student in that area. But it's a place that's yours, that's there for you, and you're allowed to, you know, be vulnerable, and you can be gross and unprofessional. It doesn't matter, because you're going to get unconditional love and support in that environment. And it could be coming home to a very supportive family, or it could be having a different kind of outlet, a creative outlet. It can be anything, but it needs to be all yours, and it doesn't involve your students. So I think that's really important for everyone, not just new teachers, but having that, knowing that knowledge might help you balance things out along the way. Mm-hmm. So those are the 10 questions, and I can elaborate on any of them if you want. There's a lot that goes into each one, but I wanted to just put them out there. Sure.
Well, those are 10 really important questions. You know, I look at every one of these and I'm thinking, yes, that's the most important one. And then you say the next one. So yeah. Let's dig a little more deeply into each of them. I mean, you gave us a really deep introduction already, but let's start getting into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty. So sure. I'd actually like to look at these one at a time. So, you know, if we go back to the beginning and we look at this idea of, you know, having enough material for 1 year, you know, why is that so important, or what are the risks of not having that?
Well, what happens, like I said, you know, it's more of an assessment question. But if, you know, let's say you commit to a teaching position, and you did really well with your with your organization, and you know they were really impressed, and now they want you to teach this, you know, whole session. And you're like, oh my gosh, okay, that's so exciting. So what happens is, okay, so if you teach a session of like 6 or 8 weeks, and the students love it, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. And this is what I call the honeymoon phase. There's a honeymoon phase that happens with teachers and with students. They start out and it's like, oh my God, this is so awesome, and I love my students and they're so awesome, and the students are going home, oh my God, my teacher is so awesome. So there's this, you know, beginning love affair, and it takes hold of both of you. And then what happens is, once the students learn a little bit more, if they love that first session, they're going to want more. It's not like they're going to go away. I mean, why would you give up something that you love? So you're guaranteed a few might get really addicted and they want more. So if you don't have more to keep giving them, then you might lose them as a student. Your confidence might start to wane. There's all kinds of reasons why you should have enough material. There could be a time where someone in your family is sick or you fall sick and you don't have as much time to plan your lesson. You need to be able to sort of come up with them in a shorter amount of time than what you normally like to do. So there's a lot of reasons why you should be very well prepared. And so I usually suggest to, you know, think about 30, 35, maybe 40 types of classes that you could teach, like lessons. So, you know, I can teach figure eights in 5 different contexts. And that's, you know, part of that teaching process too, is being able to have enough material to teach things in different ways, because not all students learn the same way. So there's a lot that goes into that. But what happens is, if that honeymoon phase ends, then it starts becoming a job, and it's not as much fun anymore for the teacher or the student if you're struggling to come up with new combinations or new choreographies or new things to teach. And you don't want that to start sort of poisoning your classes if it gets stressful, because if it's stressful, then it's not good for anybody. So having enough material just gives you that confidence, gives you the knowledge that you've got stuff to give, and there's something that you're offering that students want to come and pay for to learn. So I think it's a big question. It's a big question. But it doesn't mean you have to absolutely have a curriculum. Most people don't when they start teaching. So,
you know, a follow-on question to that is, how can you tell if you have a year's worth? You know, when I was a newer teacher, I had a really hard time gauging how much I could fit into one lesson. And I had done a teaching apprenticeship. Like, I student taught classes for 9 months. So I was in there every single day, and I was helping with lesson planning and everything. But when I was the one in charge of it, I still didn't have a very good sense of, you know, how much time each thing that I wanted to cover would take.
You know, I think that's going to be different for the type of class you're teaching, and also the students that come in. It could be different. You could have really, absolute beginners with no movement experience. You're going to, you know, maybe move a little bit slower, and sometimes you might move a lot faster. I think that's sort of one of the things, is having those lesson plans and being prepared, is sometimes if you need more material, you can add it in, but that goes into that preparation. But I think a lot of teachers really do struggle with that, and it takes a while to find your rhythm. And you never know when you get into something in class and it sparks the interest of the students, and you just spend a little bit more time on it. So I think that's okay. I don't think that's a really big thing you have to know beforehand. I think that knowing you have the material, there's a saying in the classroom that the teachers used to say, is that you always overplan, and it's okay if you don't get through it. That's just what you do, and most of the time you don't get through that material, and that can be good. So it doesn't mean that, you know, you failed or anything. But yeah, I don't think that's as much of a big deal, because I think you feel your way around that. You figure it out along the way. So. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you know for a fact that you don't have a full year's worth of material, at least in the way that you're currently approaching your lesson plans. What can you do about that? How can you bridge that gap?
Well, if you don't know, if you sit down and you're trying to come up with different things to teach, if you can't really come up with things to teach, and the way that you're going to teach them, or just ideas on what you would do, either choreography or combination, maybe try and go to a training program, or get more continuing education, find some workshops. You want to find out what the teacher training programs are teaching. So even if you are not able to go to them, look one up. Just do a Google search and look at what is being offered, what is included. And it could be from anywhere, but you're going to find a lot of similarities. I mean, there might be some that have styles associated with it, but you're going to find a lot of similarities. If you don't have that, then you might try to really work on your research, try to find more workshops and training classes that you can attend yourself. And a lot of times it's, just trying to figure out what it is that you know. You may know a lot of things that you could teach, but you just don't know how to access it. So having that experience with going through workshops and maybe networking with other dancers and seeing what they're doing, that might be something to do. It's really, I think it's a different experience for everyone, just depending on where you are in your journey and in your training. It could differ. But definitely getting yourself where you are being exposed to more of the training that you feel you need.
Mm-hmm. I think that one thing that really changed for me as I became a more experienced teacher was how I thought about what material was. That it was, okay, I'm going to teach them this mm-hmm. movement mm-hmm. and this movement, and I'm going to put it together into this combination.
Yeah.
I still use that format a lot of the time, but another thing that I've tried to do is to think about different angles on the material. So, if we're teaching figure eights, why is this important? What do I do with figure eights? And so sometimes that segues into things like timing patterns, because when I do figure eights, I really like to play with fast and slow. And so, in my figure eight lesson, I might bring in like concepts like timing and mixing and speeds. And those are things that I wouldn't necessarily have thought of as material, but that my students can start using to create interest in dancing immediately, and that's something that doesn't have to wait until more advanced levels.
Go back
to the idea that you were saying of, accessing what you know. And
right,
sometimes it's
right.
What questions are you asking yourself?
Right. And a lot of times I think of this, and like I said, coming from the elementary school classroom, we taught in thematic units, and I still use that. In fact, I really have a hard time teaching without some kind of a roadmap and a theme. So I think themes are a great way, like you were talking about, putting that figure eight in different contexts. That's a theme in itself. But being able to identify what those themes could be have a lot to do with the music. I like to think about themes related to the types of music or the musical forms, like the drum solos or the tocsin. And you can take those same kinds of movements and put them in different contexts, and you start thinking about them and doing them completely differently. Or what we always think, even in the classroom, it's like, the kids forget, the students forget what they know. And you have to remind them, you already know how to do this. We're just going to put it in a different context. But you need to be able to go back and be able to remind them with patience that they already know this. And putting it in different contexts is just another way that they're growing in their dance. But I think that part takes a lot more practice in just the teaching aspect of it. I think there's a lot of things that we don't know when we start teaching. Most of us don't know, because it's really hard to prepare someone for it. It's something that you have to actually do to learn for yourself. That's why you went through that student teaching process. It's something you just do. It's a practical. You have to get in there and you have to discover things for yourself. It's very much like actually learning how to dance again, going back to that training. So you're not going to learn to dance by watching the moves and you know, repeating the counts and beats in your head. You have to actually do it. And I think teaching is the same way, is that you're going to learn a lot on the job, but there's a lot of prep that you can do beforehand. But most of it, as far as strategy and methods, learning about what students need, things like that, a lot of that you discover on your own. You could do a lot of reading on it and research, but a lot of it you do have to discover on your own. But having that background is going to prepare you for it. Having that, that thinking about material again, thinking about the material in the sense that the topics, often we think about dance topics, you know, thinking about the workshops that you've attended or thinking about the workshop ideas, those can all be sort of topics or material for your curriculum. So really having that that creativity jump out at you within your own dance, if you are curious about something, maybe that's material for your classes. And I often use things that I want to learn about as material. So there's a lot of ways to access it. I think that's, you know, that's a big thing. But I mean more in the sense of your being able to have most, you know, I think a lot of people think moves, thinking about the moves in that way, and that's definitely a part of it, but also music, things that have to do with music. I mean, that's a big part of what can be considered part of what you can offer. Your students is how to put all those things together in the context of the music. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to explore there.
Absolutely. So speaking of music, let's take a closer look at your second question, which was,
sure,
do you have enough of a music collection?
Right.
So you touched on this a little bit, but tell us more about why this is so important. Especially, you know, the difference between teaching music and performing music has been very big for me too, so I'd love to hear more about why
right.
you think that's important.
I have to say, I think that the dance should begin with music. I'm rarely inspired by just the movement itself. I actually start with the music. I start with what music I want to explore or what dance style I want to explore, and that's usually linked to a style of music or, you know, geographic music. And the music collection is important. One, it shows that you're knowledgeable about the industry. We talked about that a little bit, that you have a massive enough collection because you've taken a lot of different classes. You've researched a lot of different music. You are curious about the different rhythms because this is really a big, massive topic. You know, there's a thing I like to say, one of my favorite quotes about music is you can never have too much music. Even if you never dance to it, you need to be familiar with all kinds of different Middle Eastern music or whatever your genre is. And so even if you only teach tribal, you should learn about the other styles of music as well. If you only teach Egyptian Oriental, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't know about the other dance styles or other musical styles. It's really about appreciating and also being able to tell the difference to your students, what is different about them. You might be able to give words that you've read, but being able to help them distinguish the feelings of Arabic music from Persian music, which can be very, very different. And I often get this question, oh, what's the difference? Well, we're going to, you know, that's why we're in class. We learn those differences. But having the teaching music separate from your, you know, the performance music that you choreograph to. The other music sort of knowledge is the music that's appropriate for the levels of students that you're teaching or the type of class that you're teaching. You're not going to use the same music for an advanced level choreography that you would for a beginner or low intermediate choreography. And it's not just about the length, so that certainly has a lot to do with it, but it's also about understanding the structure of the music and whether that's going to be appropriate for a beginner level or more advanced level. Are there too many changes? Are there too many sort of uneven phrases where you can't, predict what's going to happen? It goes kind of crazy. I mean, those are things that, a beginner is not going to go well for them if there's so much going on in the music that it's too complicated. The purpose of having a choreography to a piece of music is so that they can use that as a tool to learn about the dance and that connection between the dance and the music. So the music collection, in the sense that for each type of class, you want to have your drill music for whatever movement. So if you, for example, are doing your figure eights class, you might not put on a really fast drum solo song. Or you might, if you're trying to demonstrate that, but that might not be the first choice. You could be demonstrating or showing how to use figure eights in a drum solo, but that's probably not the first thing you're going to do. The first thing you want to do is you want to be able to focus on the movement itself and then bring the music into it. So you want music that's going to have sort of a calm flavor or a steady beat that, can be ignored, but is also there as a guide. So these are things to keep in mind when looking through your music collection or looking for music to add to your collection, is what's the purpose of what you're going to teach? Are you going to teach the movement in that context? And is that the first step, or is there another step before that? And what track will you choose for that? So that in itself is, I think, having different music for different purposes. There's also the type of class, as far as if it's a technique class or if it's a fitness-based class, where you're in front of the class and you lead the class. There's not a lot of correction or technique. You don't slow down a lot to go over those little nuances. But it's just really a fun class. There's a little bit of guidance in the movements, but mostly people are there to have fun. So you might not pick very ethnic-sounding music. Even though I love folklore, I'm very careful in which kinds of songs I use in my fitness class. Some of them love it, some of them don't. And you just, it's okay to expose them to things, but it's not something that you want to force on them right away. See, because they have a choice. They can come to your class or not. You want to have the music that's going to energize them. So having sort of safe music for that environment, that the fitness recreational environment, I think is a really good idea. The other part of that go ahead.
I'm going to say that, that kind of leads into, how I approach choices at the beginner level too, is, my whole concept when it comes to what music I choose is I want to help them acquire tastes for Middle Eastern music, because for a lot of people come into it thinking this sounds weird, right? A lot of people, some people hear the music and they fall in love immediately, and other people, they really need, the easy introduction. So beginners never get Ms. Mar in my class. We get Ms. Mar in intermediate classes.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. That is something, we have to look for a variety of things, and let the taste grow on them. Let that music grow on them. We can't force it. It's one of those things, though, is that the music draws people in. I used to ask my students on the forum, or in class, I would ask them, what drew you to belly dance? What was your first experience with belly dance? And what did you think of it? Why are you here? And I think 9 times out of 10, they would say, oh my God, the music. They would just fall in love with the music. And, I'm not sure what they, what they heard, but having the different variety of music, I think, is so important, even just to keep them engaged throughout the class, but also to keep them coming back. If you use the same music all the time and never change, it can get kind of boring, but, throwing in surprises here and there is really nice. And then they do begin to learn about the music. Hey, what was that song? I really like that song. What's he saying? That's the other thing they ask. What's he saying in the song? So So having, you know, not just the collection, but if you're going to use a song, maybe learn a little bit about it too, so that you know what he's saying.
Because that's part of their education too.
Exactly.
So why don't we move a little bit on to number three? So this is talking about the understanding the needs of students with different skill levels, interests, and experience. So can you tell us about why that's so critical? We touched on that a little bit already, but let's dig a little deeper.
Right. Well, most new teachers, they start out teaching beginners, and they might not know, they might have been told through the internet or other sources that we need to educate our students about certain standards and things in the community, you know, professional standards. And you know, they may take that as a clue as to, you know, I need to make sure my students know about the professional standards and things like that. But the beginner class is probably not the class to discuss that. That would probably be more appropriate for the advanced level class that you may teach later on. But understanding the needs of beginner students versus the fitness recreational student, let me start there, is oftentimes they can be very similar, but it also depends on how you approach the class. What I do is I try not to promise everything to everyone. Even if I am offering a basics sort of class, I want to make sure that I offer it for a specific audience, but I'm not going to, you know, tell them that it's not good for you if they don't fit that. So, for example, a beginner class that I am teaching that teaches technique and performance skills for the beginner, I'm not going to go into a big aspect with what I would do with the fitness classes. I wouldn't do the same thing in that class as I would in my fitness classes. But if one of the fitness students wanted to join that class, I wouldn't tell them that it's not appropriate for you because you're only interested in fitness. But you know, maybe they don't know. Maybe they want to come and find out. But sort of tailoring the beginner experience and performance is going to be very different than a more experienced level. So for example, in the beginning levels, if you're teaching belly dance as a performance art, you're probably not going to focus on actually having a performance, but you want to focus on teaching the confidence and the poise that comes through learning performance skills. So just because they're a beginner doesn't mean that, you know, they won't appreciate that, but that they are still allowed to just enjoy the class for what it is and not be pressured into performing. So that's something that, you know, it can be very sensitive to some people. They don't want to have that pressure to perform when they don't have a lot of experience. But teaching them that confidence through performance skills can be very beneficial to them. I mean, that could, you know, it could potentially really increase their confidence where they would want to perform in a, you know, in a future time. But yeah, just knowing what that psychology is about the beginner student, or even, I'm focusing on the beginner just because we tend to start out teaching that group. But a lot of beginner students are very sensitive to correction. They don't, you know, they may not want to be touched by someone who doesn't know them very well, or, you know, understanding, you know, when is it okay to touch a student, when is it not okay, you know, or the other way around, when, you know, these are things that we may not think about when we're in the classroom. We say, oh, I'm, you know, I saw on the internet that I can help the students by having them touch me, or I can touch them, but this is actually not okay if you don't know them, if you don't have a relationship with the student. So those are things that, you know, we have to be aware of. And if you're not aware of them, it could, you know, you'll learn eventually. Somebody might tell you, hey, I didn't like that. But it's something to be aware of before you come into that classroom and, you know, have that, you know, make that mistake and potentially, you know, an embarrassing situation. So, you know, these are different needs at different levels of students.
Another thing that I think is really interesting in the way that you phrase this question is that you broke it into skill level, interest, and experience. And I think
Right.
it's really easy to mush those all together into one thing. But, you know, I've had a student in my beginner class who'd been dancing longer than I have. She was just never very serious about it. She was one of those people who
Right.
loved to come and just
Exactly.
move. And she was this huge, shining, smiling presence and
Exactly.
totally uninterested in correction. And totally different set of priorities from most of my other students.
Right, right. And, you know, there's always going to be students that are not going to fit a mold. You know, you're going to have, you might have that student in your beginner class who just, holy cow, I'm ready to put you on the stage. But maybe they don't want to be on the stage, you know. so, yeah, that's, you know, that's definitely, you need to pay attention to their needs, and we can't always tell them that.
And, you know, that's one thing that was, in hindsight, it was really obvious, is, you know, you can ask them these things.
Right.
You know, one time I just had, like, a little, like, coffee social after class one time. It was, like, let's have a big talk about how this is going and what you want. And, you know, I brought coffee and other people brought cookies, and we had a really nice talk. And it's like, oh, that's what you're interested in.
Right. You can ask your students, you know, but if you don't have students and you're, you know, you haven't started teaching or you're just teaching one-off classes, these are things that you probably don't think about as much. So that's really getting into when you're already teaching and you're starting to learn your way around. Oh, I have this, you know, I have this student. And, you know, so, yeah, all kinds of situations and experiences that students can long for in the classroom.
And, you know, that kind of ties into something. Even if you are a brand new teacher, you know, one thing that I don't do as regularly as I should, but I try to do, is halfway through the semester, you know, I ask people how it's going. Often I do that through a survey.
Right.
Back in the day when I had fewer classes, I'd just try and, like, add some social time after a class and just do a check-in and see how everybody's doing. Because, you know, sometimes there are things that are really bugging people and they don't feel comfortable saying it.
Right.
Or they have requests
Right.
that you could totally handle, but they don't think to ask.
Exactly, exactly. Right,
and,
you should always check in with
your
students anyway.
Your first 8-week session, you could do that a month in.
Yes. Yeah, there's all kinds of ways that you can learn about what your students' interests are, and especially if you are brand new. You could just do a sort of a generic class, but let the class evolve and tell you. And oftentimes, this is how we sort of come up with a lot of our teaching ideas, is just talking to our students and learning about them, asking them what they want. If they're doing really well with the choreography and they've expressed an interest in performing, then, you know, now you know that that's something that they might be wanting to do. But yeah, absolutely. Having the students actually sort of, you know, I don't want to say dictate, that might be a very strong word, but helping you develop the class and helping you evolve the class is good. It depends on, you know, your relationship. If you have a close relationship with them or you bonded with them in a way that makes everyone comfortable and doesn't put anyone in, you know, in a vulnerable situation, then that's great. I get a lot of my ideas on types of classes and where to focus the class energy. A lot of it comes from the students and what their specific needs are. And that could change from class to class. You know, one advanced class may not be interested in, you know, doing what you want to teach them. They might have their own agenda. So.
That's really true. You know, I grew up in an improv tradition, right? So the entire core aesthetic of everything that I learned was you're a soloist on stage improvising with live music. And I also teach for a belly dance club at a local university. And, you know, I'm the employee in this situation. I get to choose the curriculum, but I'm there to provide them with what they want. And their whole thing is they want group pieces for their annual show. And it's,
right.
You know, the style I get to choose, the music I get to choose, but it's still, you know, what I teach them is different from what I teach the same level of my local students who I'm trying to, you know, equip to get up there and express themselves individually on stage. And it's very different.
Right, right. Yeah, so you're going to have different experiences with not just different levels, but just different people, because people are unique and they're individual. And This could also be a geographic question too. You know, what type of community you're in can also determine the needs and interests of your students. So some of it is skill level related, and a lot of it is not. There's so many different factors that you want to consider. I mean, you know, where we live here, there are all kinds of classes, and there's big belly dance studios, and then there's, you know, smaller little communities of dancers who are teaching in more of the recreational type setting and in the gyms. And they're all different. And everybody's, you know, you can choose the type of teacher in the class that you want. But there's a lot of teacher hopping too. So, you know, there's all kinds of ways that you can meet the needs of your students, but you can't be everything to everybody. So I think that's really important to remember too, is, you know, you don't want to try to do everything that your students say that you should do.
Oh, yeah. All right. So we've been at this for an hour already, and we do still have time, but I want to make sure that we have enough time to get some of my later questions, too. So I do have a few more follow-ups on a few of the 10, but I'm not going to dig as deeply into all of them.
Sure.
So I think the fitness level question is a pretty straightforward one. I think most people know, you know, how to work on your stamina if you don't have it,
right?
Et cetera. So, you know, one thing I want to dig a little deeper into, though, is question number 8, which is, you know, are you willing to give even when you need nurturing? You know, it seems like the really hard part of this is that, you know, you do need to give, but you do need to make time for yourself and make sure that you're getting what you need, because if you don't, you're going to lose your ability to give. Do you have any tips on finding the right balance?
Well, I think this is more about having an outlet for yourself. What I was thinking when I wrote this question is that it has to do with the why of teaching. That hopefully you don't want to teach because you have a need to have a place where you can be nurtured. So this is one of those things is it shouldn't be a place where you go to get attention or you go to get nurturing, where you go to feel good, but it's a place where you go to give, and you have other outlets for that. So how to balance all of that out, I think it really comes down to the question, the 10, having that support system. But you know, even if you don't, and you've gotten yourself into this, you know, you have a teaching obligation, you know, are you still willing to go in and do that? And also give up some of your time for that. Give up some of your time where you would be choreographing for your students. You would normally want to do that for yourself, but now you have to choreograph for your students or come up with combinations for your students. Or You wrote a choreography for yourself, but now you want to teach it to your students because you promised them a choreography. But it's having that, just having a place where you're not the one that is responsible, having that separate from your teaching obligation, your responsibility to your students. So are you willing to give is not really necessarily giving of yourself so much that you don't have anything left, but that you're not going into teaching thinking that you're getting from it, that it is really about giving as well as getting, but you're not thinking just about yourself. You're not thinking that this is going to be a way to make you feel good. And it does make us feel good, but it has to be makes you feel good because you're giving. But as what you asked about tips on balancing that out, you know, make sure that you have a separate place where you do your own practice. Make time for yourself so that you're not interfering with your students learning in class and venting in class. You don't want to put that on them. Giving yourself time to learn something new before you introduce it to your students, giving yourself that moment to relax before you go into the classroom to teach, there's lots of ways to connect with things outside of the dance community. And I always think it's good to have an outlet that is separate from your dance world, where you don't have to, you're not responsible for anything there, and you can be a student, you can be vulnerable there. And I say that in the sense that because dance tends to be such a passion for us, and the sometimes critique can feel a little bit personal, when it actually is, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be a personal thing. But taking that time to nurture yourself outside of the dance, so doing things outside of the dance community and outside of your students, giving yourself that time to do that. And again, I think everybody is unique in that, is that you make time for the things that are important to you, and you learn over time how to do that if you're aware of it. Giving yourself that moment to think about that and planning out your week, planning out your months, giving yourself time in the calendar to have for yourself, so that you have breaks, natural breaks in your schedule. Those are all things that I do to help me stay balanced. And scheduling things that don't have anything to do with dance, just once in a while I'll do something that's different. But really, it's that planning and making sure you put in that time that you need, put your teaching time in, but then schedule some time outside of that so that you can have that to yourself.
Really important.
Yeah.
I know for me, I have to schedule my personal dance time, so my own private practice, and I have to schedule time where I can't do anything dance related at all.
Yeah.
So every weekday morning I practice, and on Sundays I teach 4 classes. And so I have a really strict, unless there's a workshop that I'm going to, I do not do anything at all dance-related on Saturdays. If there's a workshop or a show, I'll do it. And then I have to take another weeknight off. And
right,
that's the only way I make it through.
It's true. And when
your hobby becomes your business, it becomes something different. And it doesn't mean that you don't love it any less, but it has a different role in your life, and it feeds a different part of you than when it's just the thing that you do only because you love it and not because this is your career, whether it's your primary source of income or not. It's a career. And it's a very, very different thing.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's really hard for us to sort of separate our dance from ourselves, mm-hmm. but I think it's important to do that. There's a little thing I sometimes, something that we learned in school is you don't always believe what the kid tells you happened in school, and you don't always believe the kid when he tells you what happens at home. So there's this thing is, you don't always know what's going through your students' minds, when you're teaching a class. You could be there and you could be thinking, oh my gosh, this is, I can't believe I'm lost. I don't know what I'm, what I was thinking. Oh, anyway, let's do this. And then later on, you're feeling like, oh my gosh, that was terrible. I just totally, I don't know what's wrong with me. I lost it. And then the students come back, oh, that was so awesome. That was so great, So it's just, having that, your dance is a part of you, but it doesn't have to be everything.
Mm-hmm. I think it's healthier if it's not everything.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are the big kind of dig deeper questions that I wanted to ask. But I have a couple of follow-ups.
Sure.
So what if you've, gone through these 10 questions and you realize that, you don't actually, you can't actually answer all of them just yet, and you think you might have started a little too early. In that situation, what should you do?
Well, if you went through the questions and you realize, oh gosh, I don't feel like I can answer half of these. First, don't panic. It doesn't mean that you're not ready or that you shouldn't be teaching. It just means that you need some more time to evaluate your situation. You might want to sort of evaluate your goals and ask the reasons why you want to teach. What is it about teaching that appeals to you? I think answering that is, if you haven't already, I personally think the whys of things are really important. You want to understand why you want to do it, because that's going to help you figure a lot of things out. But, you know, you can't answer them. It's time to sort of self-reflect a little bit, find out, you know, ask yourself what appeals to you about teaching, you know, and about dance. You know, maybe it's not teaching that interests you. Maybe it's more of, I need to go to the next level of my career. I want to do something really big with my dance. I want to share my dance, and teaching just seems like the next natural step. But maybe that's not it. So I think evaluating and asking the whys are really important. But let's say you know why, you absolutely want to do this, and you're going to do it, but you can't answer, you know, all the questions, and you don't know. I have no idea, you know, how I'm going to come up with all those lesson plans. Well, you know, that's when you sort of take some time and start doing some research. Again, maybe try to find a teacher training program, or find a mentor, or, you know, there's lots of ways to connect, especially online nowadays. But, you know, there's people who are willing to give advice if you just ask, but you want to be very specific with what that advice is that you want. You want to know very specifically. And you can ask different people to offer their opinions. You know, this could be networking with a local dancer or local dancers. It could be, you know, chatting up at a workshop with someone. Or if you know someone's going to be at a workshop, maybe, you know, let them know that, you know, hey, I have a couple questions for you. And ask them something very specific. You know, try to find people that are that you admire, that are doing what you want to do. And, you know, ask them, you know, hey, how did you get into that? You know, how did you start teaching at the gym? Because I want to start teaching at the gym, but I'm not really sure I can do that. I'm not sure if I'm ready, or, you know, I'm not sure how to get started. You know, ask a question, but be specific. You know, you don't want them to, you know, give you the training and or mentor you right away. But this is sort of how you start, you know, digging in to see who might be willing to help you. Just ask a very specific question. And again, you know, just keep your training up. You know, most of it is really about going into a workshop or a class with a very specific intent. And, you know, it could be taking another beginner class. Maybe you need to take some beginner classes to, you know, find out what it's like to teach beginners again, because we forget. So there's lots of ways to continue that training. And sort of beef up your experience and help you answer those questions if that's your gap. If the gaps are in sort of your, you know, in your personal life, again, that's something that you're going to have to reflect on and answer those questions for yourself. I don't know that anybody can really help you with that and personalize it to you, but definitely you should start that part of it, as far as making sure that you're emotionally ready and to handle the demands of teaching, that, you know, you're gonna be there sort of when the going gets tough, because it's not always fun. It is fun a lot, but, you know, sometimes you run into situations where it's not fun. But I think just continuing that journey that you're on of learning, and going into situations with a very clear intent of how can I learn from this so that I can learn how to be a teacher, how to be an effective teacher, mm-hmm. or just how to get started.
And I think, you know, even in the emotional questions, you know, sometimes just asking other people who have been there how they handled it can be helpful. You know, their approaches right. aren't necessarily always going to work for you, but sometimes hearing how two or three other people handle something, like, you know, what's your support system, what's your outlet, can it give you some ideas on how you might do it.
Right. And you might choose people who you admire. I know we have the internet, and it's very useful for us. But I think that you should make personal connections. That's really my preference. But I understand that a lot of connections are made online. And but yeah, asking others, you know, just be very specific what you want to know. I think people are very willing to talk about their experience, if you make that connection with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've said specific a couple times, and I really want to highlight this. Even, like, surprisingly famous people are really happy to help if you're specific about what you want. But when somebody asks you, oh, can you give me some tips on teaching? You know, nobody knows
right.
how to start. It's a much harder question to ask. And I think
right.
sometimes we think that the general question is more polite. Like, oh, could you give me some tips? It's just a little thing as opposed to, can I pick your brain on this really specific question? And but, you know,
right.
one sounds lighter and easier and it's not.
It's true. I know. No, it's definitely easier to answer if you're very specific. And you should, you know, have specific questions for, you know, you can ask the same question of, you know, three or four different people or, you know, ask each one something different because, you know, you know them, you know their specialty or you know who they are and their background. But, it, you know, it's also great if you can find someone who can help you be, find a mentor or be a mentor to you that knows you or someone you can talk to that knows you or knows your community even. Those are good because it can vary on how you break into teaching and, you know, what it's like. I mean, I know in the times that I started, we weren't always, the question that people asked, you know, are you qualified to teach? It was like, we have 12 people who are ready to take a belly dance class. Can you teach it? You know, so... You know, those times have changed. So definitely seek out those people that, you know, maybe you can make those personal connections with.
So let's say that you're a teacher, you've been teaching for a really long time, and you've got students who you think may be ready to start teaching too.
Mm.
How can you start nudging them in that direction and getting them ready?
Well, first, the students themselves have to want to do it. I think that if someone is not interested in teaching, I don't think that you should force them or push them towards that. It's just like, you know, if someone doesn't want to be in a performance, you know, you don't want to pressure them because it's just, you know, going to drive them away. It could potentially. So you need to know that they do want to teach. That is something that they themselves want to do. And if you think that they might be ready, one of the things that you can do as the mentor teacher is to provide opportunities for them to do a couple of things. One is to let them be in an authority position, maybe lead a warm-up or teach a workshop, maybe have them, you know, write a blog or something, but something that will spotlight them as a role model or a person of authority that, you know, maybe they can, other students can look up to and potentially learn from and be a student of. The other thing you can do is to give them those opportunities where they can showcase what is unique about them. So even though they may come and teach part of your curriculum or part of your warm-up or a combination in your style or something that you're working on, you know, do they have something special and unique, or do they have a specific audience that maybe they are especially good at teaching? You know, maybe they're really good with people with injuries. Maybe they have a background in physical therapy, and they want to help dancers avoid injuries or help them, you know, work through them. So those are opportunities that you can give them to sort of help them be in that position. It really has to do with what resources you have available to you, and how much of your own time are you willing to give. If you have a mentoring program and it's all, you know, set up, then, you know, you probably have experience in, you know, sort of bringing them into the classroom, doing their student teaching. If you don't, you could set one up just for this, you know, the student or, you know, in one or two, however many. If it's just one, you just set up a program where, you know, only one person, you know, one person's in at a time if you really don't want to spend that much time on it. Because this is, you know, that may be one of the reasons why you need another teacher to sort of help you take some classes. But yeah, having that opportunity for them to be in that position, I think is going to help both of you, is giving those opportunities for them to be in that teaching role.
And so, you know, looking at the opposite situation, what can teachers do if their students want to teach before they're ready?
Well, you know, that it's kind of a tricky thing. It's a tricky situation. Depending on how your relationship is with the student, how long they've been in your classes, how long they've been dancing, and, you know, what your relationship is with them, one of the things that you have to keep in mind is that they might just go out and do it anyway, whether you tell them, you know, they're ready or not. They might just go out and do it. So one of the things I think is really important is not to push them away or turn your back on them. I think that's the time they might need someone to mentor them the most. A lot of times students might talk about teaching. They might talk about they want to be a teacher, and they might talk about doing it, but it may just be, you know, they need to hear it. They need to use you as a sounding board. It's just an idea that's going through their head. They may not actually be serious. So, you know, don't jump to conclusions. You don't want to turn them away, but you do want to give them information. You know, give them information on what is required. You know, if there's something that maybe outside of your what you offer, you're outside of your opinion. If there's an article or something that says here's what you need to have before you start teaching, you know, pass that on to them. And you let them figure it out for themselves. Give them what they need. Don't turn your back on them. I think that might kind of backfire sometimes, but you want to be there for them. So one, you don't want to lose them as a student if they really do need more training. They're really not experienced enough, not qualified to teach. But you don't want to be the one to say, hey, you can't do that. Nobody likes to be told they can't do something. It just makes them want to go out and do it. But a lot of times they're not that serious. But if they are and they go out and do it anyway, there's really nothing you can do except be involved and monitor them sort of, you know, in a sense, even if it's from afar. So that, you know, maybe if they realize, hey, that was a mistake, I really, really do not want to do that again, and they'll just, you know, hopefully they'll come back to your class, but you've left the door open for them to do that. You don't want to close the door on that. So I think it's really important to continue being a leader, a mentor in that area for them. And like I said, if they just go and do it without you, they're, you know, you can't stop them. So
I don't know if this, I assume this would apply to teaching, but, you know, one thing that I've done when I've had students who wanted to graduate to the next class level before they're ready is to kind of approach it from a really positive, oh, that's a great goal, let's talk about what you need
right.
to get there,
exactly.
kind of place. Like, yes, let's totally do this. It's going to take a little while. Here's what
exactly.
we need to do.
Right, right, yeah.
And it, you know, it makes it clear that you're on their side. In this. You know, it's not,
exactly.
no, you cannot enter
right.
level three. Awesome. Let's get yourself up to
right.
level three.
I actually, that actually came up because I have the teacher training, that actually came up with a student who just joined my class, you know, very, in the first six weeks. I'd like to join I want to start teaching belly dance, and I want to join your teacher training. I'm like, that's awesome. So, yeah, it's great, especially if they still want the training. That's really great. That's actually a good thing. So,
and I think, you know, so I'm kind of like, you know, extrapolating from here. And so, you know, in a situation, let's say you find out that your student already starts
right.
and hasn't talked to you about it, and you're worried about that. You know, it even seems like you could even take the same approach of, you know, if you need anything, let me know. You know, I'll be happy to talk
right.
to you about stuff. You know, if you have trouble with your,
right.
you know, lesson planning, let's schedule a private lesson and we'll work through that together.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you want to leave the door open for them, but you don't want to leave it so open that they're taking things from you and you're not getting anything back, or they're just constantly, you know, they just want to use your stuff. And they're not, you know, continuing their own training or coming up with their own stuff. But yeah, definitely that's something that you want to keep that door always open.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is pretty awesome so far, but I do want to make sure we have enough time for questions and answers.
Sure.
So before we go on to the Q&A, if people take one thing away from this call, what should that be?
I think that no matter what level you're at in your dance education, however many years you've been teaching, whatever your experience is, I think that it's important to continue your education, whether that has to do with dance or in the teaching aspects of it, or learning about other things that that interest you that are part of the teaching experience. I think that's what I would want is that everyone continue learning and not feel ashamed or embarrassed to even go to a beginner class. I still pop up in beginner classes when I you know travel around. I'll go to a beginner class. I enjoy it. I think it's fun, and I always learn something. And of course, I'm approaching it from a different angle. So I think it's really important to always keep your mind and heart open to new education.
Mm-hmm. And if people want to learn more from you, how can they do that?
Well, I have a website. There's a teacher training website. It's www.rocksmosaic.com. And on the website, we have, there's some teacher information and resources. There's information about the seminars that I offer and some other books and products. And there's a website. There's a mailing list on the website you can join. And there's a free ebook when you join the mailing list that will give you updates on trainings and teacher tips and things like that. So there's lots of good stuff there on teacher training and seminar certification and some resources that I'm adding in. So it's evolving. That's the best place to go.
And it sounds like you've got everything from kind of quickie tips to some more in-depth articles to an actual full-scale training program.
Right,
on there.
Right. And there's
so
more
really
coming. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it's going to start to grow a little bit more here in this year, but there's already some good stuff there, and I'm always open to suggestions on, you know, what teachers are going through, their challenges, and, you know, maybe I can help.
Excellent. So why don't we go ahead and open this up to questions and answers?
Sure.
So those of you who are on the webcast, you can type in your question using the little question box on the right-hand side. So it looks like a little white square with a question bubble. And if you are on the phone or Skype, you can unmute yourself to ask your question by pressing star star. So on your phone, that's star star. And on Skype, that would be star star on the Skype keypad, which is not necessarily just pressing it on your keyboard. If you have a question, or if you just want to share your favorite learning from this call, I would love to hear from you. Okay, I don't see any hands raised yet. There we go. I think we have a caller.
Is that me?
Yes, hello.
Oh, I'm not sure how to use this all. This is Charlotte.
Hi, Charlotte. It's nice to hear from you.
Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. Hello, both of you. Having taken Adira's wonderful improv class last year, I guess it was, I just wonder how soon you teach beginners improv, because I love improv now. And I know it's taught a lot. I mean, it's not taught, but it's a way that is used a lot in the Middle East rather than teaching a lot of choreography. And I just wondered how you get beginners into it.
Well, basically, you trick them. You trick them into it. You don't tell them. you don't want to tell them, we're going to improvise, y'all, because that's really scary. But I think just approaching it in a way that makes it very safe for them. I mean, in the very beginning stages, I usually use formats like, we're going to use this move to follow the melody or follow whatever you hear in the music. So we've been using figure eights as an example. Let's just, you know, follow the music with your figure eight, but they have to feel extremely comfortable with the movement first.
Yes.
To be able to put that in the context of the music. But it can be taught in a very, very low level, but there's a sequence of events that sort of need to happen and learning behaviors that you want to see before you say, okay, you're on your own. So, I mean,
right.
there's I'm sure there's lots of games and things, but you know, basically, if it's a situation is safe for them and they have a tool of some sort, they have tools at their disposal to use where they feel confident. But also, you know, modeling, having something that they've already done. But usually, I don't really teach improv in that sense of dancing improv. But I do try to help them with sort of expression, and that can turn into improvisation later on. But helping them express themselves through a particular movement once they feel confident with it. So it can happen very early on in their first, you know, 10-week session, just depending on, you know, how confident you feel in taking them there and how comfortable they feel with that, you know, if they feel safe to do that.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. I hope that helps.
All right. That was a great question, Charlotte. I'm going to put you back on mute for a sec. But if you do have another question, you can feel free to unmute yourself a little bit later on. We have a question from the webcast. So Iperi Layla asks, what do you get the most out of teaching, having the experience that you have? What's the most fulfilling part of it?
I think for me, you know, it changes over time. You know, when I first started teaching, it was, oh my God, I'm teaching. This is so cool. And it was just really fun. It was the feeling that you gave other students. And I still enjoy that. You know, if my students aren't enjoying it, I sense it right away and I don't like it. Well, actually, no, I don't always. Sometimes they are enjoying it and I just think they're not. And that's true with a lot of teachers. But for me, the fulfillment is, one is that I can help someone feel good about themselves, and I can change their life. And you know, it happens. And I may not always hear about it, though. They may not tell you. You can change someone's life. In a very positive way, and you may not know it. So I know I'm making an impact, and when I hear about it or when I see it, that to me is really, that makes me feel good. And it makes everything else, you know, if I go through bad days or, you know, go through some troubled spots, it makes it all worthwhile. But I think it's just, you know, the fulfillment you get from knowing that you're making a positive impact on someone's life. I mean, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not a doctor or doing surgery, but still, sometimes it's just as important. So.
If I can weigh in too, I agree so much with that. That's a really big part of what keeps me coming back to the classroom. For me, another big thing, though, is that, like, I get so excited about this stuff. Like, I don't call myself a belly dance geek for nothing. It's like, oh my God, this is so cool, right? And then seeing other people get as excited about this stuff as I do, it's awesome, because, you know, my coworker at the next cubicle over at my day job is not going to squee over this with me.
Right.
And so, you know, just watching other people light up when they finally hear the difference between a doom and a tech or something, or, you know, I'm learning Turkish right now, and I'm getting to the point where I'm just starting to be able to, like, mishear song lyrics, you know, but when I, you know, understand, oh my God, that says arm halfway through the warm-up, and they laugh, you know, like, I'm excited about all this stuff that we're all learning, and that's, you know, such a wonderful thing.
It is. It is. It's awesome. And we have lots of inside jokes.
Oh, yeah. All right. So Iperi says, very cool. All right. If anybody else has a question, go ahead and press ** to unmute yourself, or you can type it in on the webcast. I'd also love to hear what people's favorite thing that they learned during this call would be. So even if you've already chimed in, feel free to do it again. Okay, I think we might actually be done, and we have been at this for precisely 90 minutes, so I think we'll go ahead
awesome.
And call that a night. So thank you so much, Karayun.
You're welcome.
And thank you again to our sponsor, the Las Vegas Belly Dance Intensive, which, again, is in its final year. So to make sure that you don't miss out on your very last chance at this event, be sure to sign up now at bellydanceintensive.com. And once again, I'm going to be there, and Karayun is going to be there teaching this year, so you definitely want to show up, and we can all meet up there. I'm also going to be doing a session fairly soon of short interviews. So it'll be a lot like a Clubhouse call, only significantly shorter, probably more in the 10 to 20 minute range with several of the instructors on that. So that'll be coming out in the next couple of months and weeks. All right. So thank you so much, Kadi, and this has been so helpful.
You're welcome. I've really enjoyed this.
And thank you, everybody, for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We've got a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members. I'll send out an email shortly, which will have an invitation to that group. Do keep in mind that because it's a private group, there will be a delay between when you ask to join and when you can post, because I have to actually go in and approve you. But that email will also include a link to the call recording. So if you want to listen to this again and mine it for more details, you can do that. I'll include a link to Katayoon's resources, so you can go and check out her tips and her teacher training. And I'll also have a link to our feedback survey. I run the Clubhouse, but this is really for all of you as well. So it's important to me to know what topics you're interested in, what speakers you'd like to hear from, if there's any way that I can improve the Clubhouse, and so on. So don't be shy. Just go ahead and use that link so I have all that feedback in one place. Our next call is coming up at some point in April. I don't have the exact dates ready yet. And my guest, Asala Ibrahim, is going to be talking about Iraqi Kalia. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of Clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know anybody who would like to join us, you can invite them to do so at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.